USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Before leaving the White House, President Trump talks about the deadly mass murders in Texas and Ohio.
Frankly, we need intelligent background checks, okay? This isn't a question of NRA, Republican, or Democrat.
The president is saying there's tremendous support for those background checks. The president also has a message for children going back to school in the wake of all these mass murders.
Well, my message to young children going back to school is go and really study hard, and someday you'll grow up and maybe be president of the United States or do something else that's fantastic. They have nothing to fear. They have nothing to worry about.
The police chief of Garden Grove, California, is blaming a 2011 law for the early release of a man who went on a deadly stabbing spree. The bill shifts certain prisoners into county jails or under the supervision of county probation officers. This is USA Radio News.
Blue Star Medicated Ointment gets 5-star reviews from our loyal users for fast relief of the pain and itch of almost any skin irritation.
Blue Star soothes insect bites and fungal infections.
It really works on the summer rashes I get every year.
I had psoriasis on my elbows. Blue Star worked wonders.
Amazing stuff. Smear a bit on and the itch is gone.
Look for the white box with the Blue Star in the first aid section. Feel Blue Star work fast or your money back.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
The number of detentions at the southern border has dropped below 100,000 for the first time in months. Acting CBP Commissioner Mark Morgan tells Fox Business it's a start, but we're not out of the woods by any means.
Our daily apprehension numbers are still in excess of 2,500. That's still a full-blown crisis. And although Mexico is stepping up, government of Guatemala is stepping up, these are still not durable, long-term, sustainable solutions.
Morgan also says agents are doing the best they can. Democratic presidential candidate Julian Castro is on the defensive, defending the tweets of his twin brother, Congressman Joaquin Castro. The Texas lawmaker tweeted out a list of presidential donors and their employers. Julian Castro was speaking at the Iowa fair.
The right wing wants to make this a story because they want to pretend like in some way that's equivalent to the hate or the division that Donald Trump is fostering in this country.
Castro is polling at less than 1% in Iowa, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
Parents, the end of summer is here. You want to get the best deal ever on a good night's sleep while you're paying for all that stuff for school supplies? How about getting the best deal ever on a MyPillow? Good night's sleep for just $69.98 for two MyPillow premium pillows, $34.99 per pillow, the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. A good night's sleep is worth twice the price. So go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA, get great savings on a good night's sleep.
Twitter reverses course and unlocks Senator Mitch McConnell's campaign account. This after the senator sent out a link of his house being harassed and people coming to his house and saying they were going to kill him. Conservatives believe there is a bias against them on social media, to which Silicon Valley investor Peter Thiel tells Fox News.
You always have the question, are these things sort of innocent accidents, or are they sort of intentional acts of political sabotage? And the Republicans, I think, are right to be somewhat suspicious because this stuff keeps happening. And Silicon Valley is something of a one-party state.
The man behind a tongue-in-cheek Facebook event page gets a visit from the feds. And USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
Matty Roberts, who created Storm Area 51, says that FBI agents showed up at his home recently, and he admits he was very scared at first when they did. But he says the agents were actually, in his words, super cool, and just wanted to make sure that he wasn't a terrorist doing something like making pipe bombs in his living room. Roberts has repeatedly said the idea was just a joke, and he doesn't want anyone to get hurt, but nearly 2 million people had expressed interest in attending the event, which had been set for next month. Or was it? Well, the truth is out there. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
And for more news, you can find us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Here we are. Little rain this afternoon. I don't know where you were, but we had some a downpour, very short, around Round Valley Reservoir. Sun is out again. I'm Pat Smith's program, It's the Law. And I thought I'd talk to you today about some cases. But first, how about the weather? They did say light rain possible today. And that was this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. Tomorrow should be a beautiful day, sunny, and high of about 83 degrees. Tomorrow night, mostly clear. Another beautiful day on Sunday, sunny and about 83 as a high. Monday, they're mostly sunny. Again, should be warmer, high of about 87 degrees, probably more humidity. But this should be, you know, a beautiful weekend. And so let's get out there and do things. And let me tell you who is sponsoring the news and the weather. And then I'll be back. Hello.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, I just told you who sponsors the weather for the next program. So let's get back and tell you who sponsors it for this program.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Okay, I think somebody left something on my desk, so let me announce it. It's the Corn, Tomato, and Beer Festival tomorrow, August 10th. Rain date, but it doesn't look like that will be necessary. It's going to be on Sunday, but it's from noon until 8 p.m., Stengel Road in Flemington. And that should be a lot of fun. I mean, certainly, I will say corn in New Jersey is wonderful. Tomatoes good also. And, of course, coming from Wisconsin, I'd have to say there was probably a lot better beer out there. But in any event, I am one of the big promoters of New Jersey corn because, as you know, we can get fresh corn from about the 4th of July into October. So in any event, if there's any questions about this, you could visit www.loveflemington.com for more information. And there will be vendors there, and should be interesting. It just says Stengel Road, so I guess that will be near the outlets. In any event, what's happening, actually some interesting things that are happening. I should not say that, because there are interesting things to lawyers that are not necessarily interesting to other people. However, very often people get involved in situations where they have to sign some kind of a restrictive covenant. And there was an interesting case as far as I was concerned, but I think it is interesting for many people. The case is ADP, well-known company, versus Cousins, C, or not a C, sorry, K-U-S-I-N-S, decided by the appellate division. And, you know, it's a 60-page opinion, so that certainly is a, you know, very long opinion. And what it is in this case, ADP appealed the orders of the trial court. And the trial court declared the plaintiff's, that is ADP's, restrictive covenant agreements with the defendants unenforceable or to the extent that the restrictive covenants agreements, meaning the RCAs, they always abbreviate, were not declared unenforceable, placed restrictions on the scope of the non-solicitation and non-compete provisions in the RCAs. Very, very important. If someone, for example, sells a business, and some people can have other agreements, but there's certainly the non-compete provisions would be very, very important to many people, because there are many companies that require employees to sign certain non-compete provisions. I know someone who has just sold a business here in Hunterdon County, and he has, as part of that, signed an agreement not to operate a business, comparable business, for a certain period of time within a certain area. Now, the buyer of the business would, of course, say that that was part of the price, and most people who would sell a business, they certainly don't want the seller of the business to go the next day and open a competing business next door, because they're concerned that all the business would be taken, and part of the purchase price in these situations are partly for the fact that they will be getting or expect to get customers or clients. For example, one type of business that very often is fairly easy to value are dental practices. But certainly a dentist buying a practice is buying more than just the space and the equipment. They're hoping that they will continue to have the patients that the old dentist who's selling the practice had. And in fact, there are studies that would show what percentage of patients usually will stay with the new dentist. And in most cases, of course, they're thinking that the dentist who sells the practice is retiring or moving out of the area. And I think most of us, maybe especially with dentists, unless we have a bad experience with a new dentist, you know, we just don't want to pick up and go somewhere else. So in any event, in this case, the scope of the non-solicitation and the non-compete provisions, the trial judge said there would be restrictions on them. And then each of the defendants had executed a restrictive covenant agreement with the plaintiff, ADP, pursuant to their employment as a top-performing sales representative. So this is a situation where these were employees, and they were the ones who had signed these agreements. So this was not a situation where a business was selling a business, but it's very similar. So in this case, to award and incentivize each of the defendants' performance, the plaintiff, ADP, invited them to participate in a stock award incentive program conditioned on their acceptance and execution of the RCA. So in other words, they were going to get rewarded for signing this. And however, the RCA included both non-solicitation and non-compete provisions that restricted employees from soliciting plaintiff's clients or competing with the plaintiff upon leaving the company. So each of these defendants left employment with the plaintiff and went to work for the same direct competitor of the plaintiff. I'm not sure who that was, but obviously a direct competitor. And then ADP filed suit against them, alleging that each of them had breached the restrictive covenant agreement. And we heard what the trial judge said. So what happened on appeal? On appeal, the appellate division reversed the orders of the trial court. The appellate division ruled that the RCAs were, or the plaintiff's RCA itself, they had all signed the same one, was unenforceable. So where the trial judge had said that the restrictive agreements were unenforceable, to the extent or to the extent they were not unenforceable place restrictions, the appellate division said that the ruled the plaintiffs, I'm sorry, the appellate division actually reversed the trial court, and the appellate court ruled that the plaintiffs' RCA was in fact enforceable, finding the plaintiff had presented sufficient evidence of a legitimate business interest. So in order that was a legitimate business interest to support imposition of restrictive covenants on defendants. However, the appellate division ruled that the non-solicitation and the non-compete provisions were overly broad and required what they called blue penciling. So the plaintiff, what happened then is the appellate division ruled that the plaintiff ADP would only reasonably be entitled to prohibit former employees from soliciting plaintiff's actual clients with whom the employee directly interacted or knew to be a client of the plaintiff. In other words, if the former employee didn't know that someone else was a client of the plaintiff and didn't have any direct involvement, then they could basically go after that client. And the appellate court ruled that it was unreasonable to restrict defendants from soliciting plaintiff's prospective clients unknown to the defendants. So in other words, they said, how could you prohibit somebody from soliciting clients that they didn't even know were your clients? Instead, the court ruled that it would only be reasonable to restrict a former employee from soliciting a prospective client if the employee gained knowledge of that client through his or her employment. And I'm assuming they mean his or her employment with ADP. Finally, the court ruled that it was reasonable to restrict defendants from working for a competing business in the same geographic territory that each defendant worked in for ADP. Now, that has come up many times, is what is the geographic area? In other words, you can't say that somebody would be restricted from working anywhere in the United States, because obviously that would mean, for most of us, would think that's involuntary servitude if you decide to leave the company and can't work anywhere. So it has to be reasonable. And as I said, the person I know, a friend of mine that just sold a business, that restriction needs to be reasonable. In other words, if the geographic area was Hunterdon County, or perhaps even an area of New Jersey, that when he sold the business, that whatever the area that the business generally covered, that would be reasonable. In any event, this is approved for publication. It's what they call a labor law case, and it was ADP, the payroll company, against these defendants. So it's, that one. I think any business and, frankly, any attorneys who are putting together those agreements should take a look at this case. And in the event that you're an employee, and it would be generally a high-level employee who is been given something, and remember, these defendants were actually given awards, and they were able to participate in a stock award incentive program. So they weren't just ordinary employees. They weren't just getting the usual benefits. They actually had a stake in how well the company did. And that's what made the difference, I think, here, definitely. Because it was they got something in return. There's another contractual dispute. This was not approved for publication, but again, some of these contractual disputes are helpful. This is Broadway Healthcare Center versus Laser Hockman, LLC. and the plaintiffs in this case appealed the dismissal of their malpractice and breach of contract action against the attorney, and this was the attorney for their former adversaries, in a decade-long shareholder litigation. The settlement of the shareholder litigation included a mutual release agreement that released all claims against each other and their agents. And that agents is in quote. So in this case, the law firm, Lasser Hochman, moved to dismiss, relying on the release agreement and other legal and equitable defenses. So the trial judge held that the complaint and a proposed amended complaint were untimely and were barred by the litigation privilege and by collateral estoppel and the entire controversy doctrine and by the terms of the release. And the appellate division, this is an appellate division case, agreed that the settlement agreement barred the plaintiff's action. And the term agent was ambiguous and included a party's attorney. And plaintiff's secret unexpressed intention for the word to have an interpretation contrary to its plain meaning could not vary the terms of the release. So that is a situation where you have to be very careful about what you are releasing in a situation where you've been asked as part of an agreement to release all claims against the other. And, you know, who did they mean by agents? I would think that it would have been better to spell out who these alleged agents would be. Next, the criminal law case, again, not published, but of interest. In this case, it was State versus Billard, and the defendant appealed his sentence for second-degree unlawful possession of a handgun. And the police stopped defendant for talking on a cell phone while driving. And that's a big no-no, because if they see you, if they see any of us speaking on a cell phone while driving, they can pull you over and do a license check. And that's exactly what happened here. So the license check in this case showed the license plates were registered to a different vehicle. Not a smart thing to do, obviously. And so the vehicle was impounded. So in this case, the defendant asked the officers to give him a short ride to where his mother could pick him up. And the officers agreed, but they said they would have to pat him down first. Now, come on, carrying a gun and ask a police officer to give you a ride? I mean, talk about stupid one talking on the cell phone in a car that has a license plate that's a license for another car. Second, asking for a ride and then agreeing to a pat-down search, because he agreed in this case. And the officer found a pistol in his waistband, and therefore he was arrested. Now, the defendant did have a valid firearms purchase ID card and a permit to purchase a handgun, but did not have a carry permit. In other words, not only would you have to have a valid firearms purchase ID card, a permit to purchase a handgun, but you have to have a carry permit. So as a result of his not having a carry permit and having a gun on his person in a car that had a different license plate, in any event, he was convicted of violating the statute, which is 2C39-5, (NBN). And that violation carried a mandatory term of imprisonment. So talk about stupid and ending up going to prison. So he had not been previously convicted of a firearm-related offense and asked the prosecutor to waive the mandatory minimum term requirement, but the prosecutor declined. And the trial court denied the defendant's motion to refer the matter to the assignment judge to determine if the prosecutor's refusal was arbitrary or capricious. And the defendant argued that the denial of a post-trial Graves Act waiver was arbitrary, and the failure to conduct a hearing, which is called an Alvarez hearing, required reversal of the sentence. And the appellate division found the defendant did not file his motion before the assignment judge. Instead, he filed it before the sentencing judge, who lacked the authority to grant the relief sought. Now, not only stupid, but he's going to be very angry at his attorneys because they obviously filed the motion before the wrong judge. But talk about, dumb things, not only driving a vehicle that has a license plate that belongs to a different vehicle or certainly doesn't belong to that one, but then to agree to be a pat-down search when he had to know that he didn't have a carry permit. And anyone in New Jersey should know that you have to have a firearm purchaser ID, you have to have a permit to purchase a gun, a handgun, and any gun, I guess, and a permit to carry. Three different things. Tell you a little bit from some of our sponsors, and then I'll come back and talk some more about some of the cases. Most of the defendants are not quite as stupid as, I hope nobody knows them, but Mr. Billard, B-I-L-L-A-R-D.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You know, I have to comment on NAMI Hunterdon. Anyone who is concerned about mental health of an adult they know, or teen or child, really, they have, meaning NAMI Hunterdon, has some excellent programs. Reach out. It's the only way to deal with these kinds of problems and maintain your sanity. We are so lucky in Hunterdon County for the various programs, the various volunteer programs and other programs that we have. I happen to be affiliated on the board of volunteer guardianship one-on-one. And again, for older people who, you know, need someone to look after their mental health would be one. But in this case, I'm thinking more their finances, their medical. They may have no one. And the volunteers who are volunteers with Guardian One-on-One are really terrific. And it's amazing how much they do. And again, if you're someone who has a little time, or frankly, most of us who volunteer don't have a little time, but we make the time because it is important. But in this case, contact NAMI Hunterdon. They're just such a good group.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Wow, two spots that I can say something good about, one right after the other. The Hunterdon Emergency Room, I have to say, have more visits than I would like, not for me, but for someone else, with someone else, I should say. And they're always, just, I'm not going to say it's a pleasure to go to the emergency room, but it's certainly much more of a pleasure at Hunterdon than at some of the other hospitals. And they, you know, just everyone at that time, you know, obviously some emergencies are worse than others, but at that time to have people who, the staff, who you know are probably dead tired, but you'd never know it, and they're helpful, they talk to you, they, you know, bring you up to date every few minutes as soon as there's a new test that's been done, et cetera, et cetera. I have to say that, the Hunterdon Emergency really, and they know if they have to send someone somewhere else, and they really do that. So in any event, that's our second spot in a row that I want to say, and am happy to say that they're just, we're lucky to have a hospital that is as caring as it is at Hunterdon. And, you know, I've been there, for example, my grandson who fractured his pelvis when he was really little, they actually opened the children's ward for him because he had to be kept overnight. And it was just pretty amazing how easy everybody was and how nice everyone was. So in any event, getting back to, here's another labor law in a contract case. This was a Camden school district versus Pitts. And Pitts appealed from the grant of summary judgment to the plaintiff, Camden City School District. And they had served tenure charges on the defendant, who had been a teacher for 27 years, to terminate the person for reasons of inefficiency. So what happened, and I'm not sure whether this is woman or man, I don't want to say that. So in any way, the teacher had been a teacher for 27 years. So to avoid the prosecution of tenure charges, the defendant offered to retire at the end of the 2016-2017 school year. Then the school district made a counteroffer requesting the defendant resign in October rather than retire at the end of the school year. So the school attorney forwarded a final draft of a written settlement to the defendant teacher's attorney, which provided that the defendant would author an irrevocable letter of intent to resign effective at the end of October. So this would have been October 2016. And then, however, what happened in this case, because you're probably saying, well, why is this now being decided with the appellate division in 2019? But in any event, neither party signed the settlement agreement. And the school council asserted that an agreement had been confirmed regardless of whether defendants signed the written agreement or not. So plaintiff therefore contended that defendant had resigned from employment. Defendant responded, now we know it's a woman, that she would not resolve her tenure charges through settlement and claimed that plaintiff had breached any agreement by keeping the defendant off the payroll since September. And plaintiff filed a complaint to execute the settlement agreement. The trial court ultimately granted plaintiff summary judgment, finding a clear agreement between the parties as agreed to by their respective counsel. Now remember, the court found that even though neither party signed the settlement agreement. It's pretty unusual. So now what the court found is that there was agreement by counsel. So let's see what happened. During the pendency of the litigation, the defendant teacher filed administrative proceedings alleging that the plaintiff's school had violated her tenure rights by removing her without certifying tenure charges and seeking to dismiss the tenure charges. The commission dismissed defendant's tenure charges as untimely because they were not certified within 30 days of being served on defendant. On appeal, the appellate court affirmed the grant of summary judgment to the school and rejecting the defendant teacher's argument that there was no binding agreement between the parties. The appellate court found that in reliance on defendant's promise to resign, plaintiff did not certify its tenure charges and was thus prejudiced when defendant changed her mind too late to certify the charges. Interesting, because what the court and the appellate division said is, hey, wait a minute. There was reliance on the promise to resign, and as a result, the school did not certify its tenure charges against her, and therefore, they summary judgment was upheld. So people often say it's very difficult, and people who are against tenure will argue that it's so difficult to get rid of a tenured teacher. This does show that, in fact, it happens, and, in fact, these agreements are upheld. Frankly, I'm on the side of tenure because otherwise it can be used politically not to get rid of poor teachers or teachers who shouldn't be there, but teachers who perhaps don't follow the party line. This is especially important to have college teachers have the ability to teach and any teacher. Certainly there are things that are over the line, but if a teacher is doing a good job just because they don't get along with the administration should not in any way jeopardize their employment. There's a tort claim case that is, again, not none of these cases that I'm talking about have been approved for publication. So they're not precedential. People, they'll find them interesting, but they can't be cited as precedent. And, of course, something with a tenure, you can certainly see that would anybody else would have the same and wouldn't need this particular case to deal with that case. But in any event, there's, I keep saying that, the case that I'm thinking about is Mira versus Hapatcong Senior Center. And the Senior Center appealed from an order that granted leave to file a late notice of tort claim. So this was someone filed a late notice of a tort claim on behalf of the plaintiff, and that denied their motion to dismiss the complaint. So on in September of 2017, the plaintiff Mira tripped and fell on the defendant's property. Plaintiff first sought legal counsel to pursue claims in March of 2018. And plaintiff admitted that she was unaware of the 90-day time period to file a notice of a tort claim. So, you know, that, and people, the reason, one of the reasons I'm talking about this case is that people can't sit on their rights, and that's what she did. So, back in September, when this happened, September of 2017, she finally filed a personal injury complaint in May of 2018, and also a motion to file a late notice of tort claim. In her motion to file the late notice of tort claim, plaintiff alleged that she suffered from various medical conditions constituting exceptional circumstances and warranting acceptance of her late claim. So this was the exceptional circumstances. So the trial judge in this case found that the plaintiff was so incapacitated both physically and mentally that she was unable to file a notice within 90 days. And on appeal, the defendants, the Hapatcon Senior Center, argued that the plaintiff that she failed to establish extraordinary circumstances in accordance with the New Jersey Tort Claims Act. The appellate division agreed and reversed and remanded. The appellate division found that the plaintiff had failed to demonstrate that her medical issues were so severe and debilitating or uncommon that she was unable to contact an attorney to pursue her claims. And the appellate court noted that there was no evidence in the record that the pain medications plaintiff was taking compromised her cognitive abilities. Okay, so what this shows is you can be pretty incapacitated and still have to file in a tort claim, the 90-day, and certainly as it wasn't just, 92 days, 93 days. I mean, this was from September until May. So the couple other comments, and I'm not going to have a lot more time. So tell you what, why don't I just talk about and play some of the sponsors, the rest of them, and then I'll come back and talk about a drug maker agreeing to pay $55 million to settle a class action suit.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Well, that's our spot for NAMI in Spanish. So it's well done, and hope it reaches our Spanish-speaking friends and neighbors, because everyone can be benefited by the programs that NAMI offers.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And this is Hunterdon Radio, and actually I'd like to welcome a new member, Velocity Cycling. Actually, anyone interested in exercise, and we all should be, more than I am, I think. But Velocity is located right on Main Street in Lebanon Borough, and it's a new business, and they will actually offer a free introductory class or cycling, or, you know, call them. I mean, they're really, I don't have the number with me right now, but I really like seeing new businesses, and especially businesses that promote health. And of course, I drive past there so often that I know one of these days I will even have to break down and go in. But so far, I think what we all know is we should exercise, and probably 90% of us should exercise more than we are, even if we're doing some exercise. And there's so many good places. Great Pilates place here in Flemington, as I said, Velocity Cycling, and certainly a lot more active, tennis centers, Health Quest for swimming. I mean, we have it all here. Just have to find the time to do it, right? Well, I guess that the case I was going to talk to you about is the drug maker, and I don't know if they pronounce it Celgene, C-E-L-G-E-N-E. In any event, they've agreed to pay $55 million to settle a class action lawsuit accusing it of violating antitrust laws by interfering with the development of generic versions of two of its cancer drugs. And interesting. I don't know anything more about it. Frankly, I don't know what drugs they actually do, what ones they've developed. And certainly, I think most of us would say that drug companies should be fairly paid for the research and development they do, but sometimes it's just unbelievable how much the cost of some of these drugs. And what's even more unbelievable to me is if you have some drug insurance, if you have insurance that covers prescription drugs, the difference between the out-of-pocket cash compared to if you didn't have it. I happened to pick up a prescription the other day, and I really noticed, how many hundreds of dollars this one prescription would have been without insurance. Believe me, it was still expensive. But the other thing, of course, is not everybody wants to take generic drugs. And frankly, sometimes there are reasons why it makes more sense to, take the brand name. But you're going to pay for it. So apparently, there are trials going on across the country and juries have answered the scientific question, did Johnson & Johnson's baby powder cause women to get ovarian cancer? That's what so many of these cases are, you know, winding their way through courts in different places, different states. Not a lot else approved for publication. An evidence case last month, State versus Hemingway, and in that case, the defendant appealed from the appellate division's affirmance of the trial court denial of defendant's motion to suppress evidence. And this was a decision by the Supreme Court, which is pretty unusual. I may have talked about this a bit, but in any event, DS filed a domestic violence complaint against the defendant and requesting that he have no contact with her or her family and that he be barred from possessing weapons. DS affirmed to the family court that the defendant possessed handguns and knives in his vehicles and in his apartment. The family court issued a warrant to search for and seize handguns, knives, and switchblades from the defendant's home and vehicles. And the defendant refused to permit the officers to search his home pursuant to the warrant. And as a result, he was arrested for obstruction of justice. The officers then entered the defendant's home and discovered cocaine and marijuana. So based on the drugs, the police obtained a telephonic search warrant, so they obviously called from the house. They got the search warrant, and they recovered drugs, ammunition, and cash from the defendant's home and vehicles. Now, no handguns or knives were found. So remember, the family court's warrant was to search for and seize handguns and knives and switchblades. But they didn't find any of these things. So the defendant was charged with drug offenses and moved to suppress the evidence. He obviously said that the family court warrant wasn't to cover these other items, and therefore it should be thrown out. So the trial court denied the motion, ruling that the telephonic search warrant set forth probable cause and that the domestic violence warrant proved an adequate, independent basis for searching of the defendant's vehicles. Now, the appellate division affirmed, and then the appeal went up to the Supreme Court of New Jersey, and so the Supreme Court reversed and remanded, and the Supreme Court of New Jersey ruled that the protection of domestic violence victims must be accomplished by abiding by constitutional protections, so, and by constitutional norms. Therefore, the Supreme Court held that a domestic violence warrant should only be issued after a trial court finds and articulates probable cause or reasonable suspicion to believe that domestic violence has occurred. And therefore, if that has happened, then the search and seizure of weapons is necessary to protect a victim. Interesting case, at least from my standpoint, because, there's something more to this, so let me finish, that the weapons that were located in place to be searched. So because the family court in this case failed to make the required findings to justify issuing the domestic violence search warrant, the search of defendant's home was unconstitutional, and all the fruits of that search are suppressed. It's called Fruits of the